up the river. It's your river. A lot of people don't know that the river is owned by the people in trust. While the Department of State Lands has jurisdiction over that, we own the river. It's our river, and we should speak up and stand up and say so.
So you are listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Kristen Yount. This show is called Water World. I'm here with Jackie Calder. She's with this Portland Harbor Citizens Advisory Group, the Portland CAG. And I'm also on the phone. We have Laura Shira with Yakima Fisheries. Laura, can you just give our listeners some background about what you do?
Sure. I'm an environmental engineer and hydrologist for Yakima Nation Fisheries, and I work in the cleanup group. And so we focus on cleanup sites associated with the Columbia River Basin, which is a very high priority. It impacts both the people and the wildlife and aquatics of that region.
And can you give our listeners some background about why Yakima Nation is involved?
Sure. You know, the Yakima Nation has been in this area since time immemorial. The Willamette River is an important source of eel. Pacific lamprey are some other terms that it's called by. This week, I believe, or maybe next week, some of our fishermen will be out harvesting eel at Willamette Falls, which is just above the site. It's maybe river. And those eel, their life cycle, they live 7 years in the mud before swimming out to ocean and then coming back. And so, you know, they're living in that toxic stew. Those that are living in the Portland Harbor area. It's hugely important to us for the sake of the eel, for the sake of the salmon, for the sake of the people and the communities surrounding that area as well, not just the tribal members, that the Lower Willamette River sustains life for all and is something that contributes to the health of the Columbia River and not takes away from it. And just like we've been here since time immemorial, we'll be here long after as well. And Apple to get the cleanup right is as aggressive as possible, and will help achieve the long-term goal of getting to the point where anyone can eat the fish in any amount in that area, and then the habitat is healthy for all the aquatic life, the wildlife, and the people that live around it. The industries will come and go, but the tribe will still be there.
Yay.
So important. And if y'all out there have never been to Willamette Falls, it is second only to Niagara Falls in water volume going over the falls. Willamette Falls is a treasure. And it's so cool. There's these petroglyphs, these carvings in the rock that show, they look like a circle with a plus sign inside, and it represents the mouth of the lamprey, the eel. So when the water is at the right level to harvest the eel, you can see the petroglyph. It's the coolest thing.
Yeah.
And
how beautiful.
It is, yeah. It's so amazing, and I know that one could go to the Museum of the Oregon Trail there if anyone wanted to go and look at the petroglyphs there. It's amazing. I get all goobered out about it because it's just like...
Oh, it's okay. I wanted to go to Toppenish this weekend where they had a big ceremony, and they have a big... ceremonial, beautiful historical information. Plus, you get to see all their cultural programs and stuff. And what a joy! What a joy!
Yeah. So the harvest, the eel harvest is next week. You say?
I think it's either this week or next week. Yeah.
Well, fabulous. I'll find out, and you can look up. on our website, kboo.fm, or sorry, kboo.org. And I will have information up on the website if anyone needs to be directed to the EPA's website, the upcoming eel harvest, and also the Portland Advisory Group website, so that if you need information, you can just go to our website, and I'll have that posted later.
One of the things that I didn't mention, and I probably should, and that is, and this again has to do with the fact that they're using natural recovery to try to clean the water. The contaminants in the water are PCBs, PAHs, dioxins, furans, pesticides, chromium, heavy metals. And the problem with them is that they are called persistent organic pollutants, and they aren't water soluble at all. Water can move them physically, or the sediment, which is where they're at. All of these chemicals are lodged in the sediment, and moving that physically takes a lot. And even then, it's just spread out. It's not necessarily converted to anything benign or healthy. They're just the chemicals. And they are really bogged down in that sediment. That's why they haven't gone anywhere for such a long time. And they are very unhealthy. They don't biodegrade. They've been in there for a long, long time.
And they will take an additional hundreds to thousands of years to degrade into something that's safer. So that's a very, very long time. And they also bioaccumulate up the food chain, which means that the low-level organisms, like the algae and bugs, eat whatever they eat and uptake some of it, and then the small fish go after them, and they end up with even higher concentrations. And so some of the top predators, like us, end up with the highest concentrations in our bodies. And so they're both persistent and bioaccumulative, and those are two very concerning things.
So it's kind of an out there question, but if one wanted to get their own toxicity levels checked, is that something that can be done? I mean, it's kind of a basic question, but if you're concerned with the levels of PCBs in your body, is that something that can be tested?
Sure. I don't know what the cost would be, but yeah, you could do that. I know that health studies have been done, and contaminants like PCBs are so ubiquitous that we all probably have some level in our blood, but it is very concerning to those who eat a high level of fish from the Lower Willamette River. What amount has accumulated in their body? It stays in your fat. It's passed through breast milk to babies, and so that's very concerning.
So I know from doing this show in the past, there has been talk about actually personally suing a possible responsible party for damages. Now that this list is out there, do you think that if the EPA Superfund cleanup plan isn't sufficient, I mean, these polluters are identified. What's stopping us from suing for damages?
I can kind of address that a little bit. I don't think we've thought about suing the polluters so much as suing Monsanto, who lied for years about PCBs or polychlorinated biphenyls, which are under the name Arylchlor. There's a whole list of them. Right now, there are seven cities that have sued Monsanto, everybody from San Diego to Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle. And recently, we talked Portland into suing Monsanto because they just literally lied to people. They lied to them for years, and people need to know that. Not only are they a problem with the chemicals that are in the canned goods, but they absolutely lied about PCBs. PAHs are a problem also, but those are mostly oil-based, and they're a sad situation. But that's who was sued, to my knowledge, and that's who should be sued, because they lied to all the polluters. I mean, the polluters are the ones that should be suing. I mean, really, because they were the ones that they were lied to. They were told it was okay. It was healthy.
It's sort of sad that, you know, we're giving the polluters yet another recourse when they could just pay up. But if they have to point the finger at somebody, it could be Monsanto, is what you're saying. Do you have any updates about the city's lawsuit?
No, I'm sure it's something that might take quite a while, because Monsanto's had a pretty good list of attorneys, as do the polluters, but I'm just saying what I know to be true, and that is, you know, that they were the original culprit. They were the liar.
Right, and so I know that one of the PRPs was an actual pesticide company that was on the banks of, you know, is that company still in business?
Rhône Poulenc is from France. They don't function here. What I found about several of the polluters is if they declare bankruptcy here and pack up and move somewhere else, as like McCormick and Baxter did. they just packed up and moved to Montana, which is really sad. And the government ended up paying what they thought was going to be $20 million to clean up that site. Turned out to be $44 million. A big cap.
Whoa, okay. So the city paid for that?
No, the federal government. When Kulongoski was our governor, he talked to George Bush and asked him for millions of dollars to clean up McCormick and Baxter, and they did it.
Okay, so that's like, if you're in the river, on the river, and you go to this site, the cap looks like cement. It's like a cement barrier on the shore, so you don't have a shore like you would normally see in the river. You see, it's like this lattice, a sort of concrete lattice over the top of the bank. And
yeah, it's sad. It's what they did was they dredged out 32 acres of creosote, which is what was made there and used on telephone poles and that. And then what they did was they dredged that out and then put layers of sand and dirt and some pump and treat systems. They also put layers of rock, so it's called armored. And they also put what Kristen's referring to is the geotextile fabric over the top, and then layered more sand over the top of that. The only thing they did wrong is they put sand, because it was in the river too, they put sand in the river to be fish friendly, and the problem with that is that it all washed downstream, so they had to go back and put gravel on top of it. So, gravel is more salmon friendly, salmonid friendly, as far as the juveniles and all the little fish.
The fry.
Yeah, the fry. Good.
So, it's sad that that's what is there, you know, because it doesn't look natural, but at the same time, it's a remedy. And having a great big cap where there used to be yardage of just old moldering creosote isn't that bad of an idea, in, you know, my opinion. But we're not going to see a lot of capping. Is that right, Laura?
No, we will see some acreage of capping. So even in some of the dredge areas, they won't dredge it completely clean. Jackie, do you have the number for the acreage of capping?
Yeah, it says the suggested amount is 17 acres, which isn't a whole lot. But because this river is so big on shipping and you know, global transportation. It's you know, crop wash is a big factor. I mean, ships have to turn around out there, and that's, well, it's a good reason to dredge, not just to make a 40-foot deep channel, but to clean it out for the ships going in and out. But capping is mostly going to be done, I understand, on the near shore. So kind of like McCormick and Baxter, because that's where it is. It's on the edge. It's on the riparian area.
So I'm looking at a table now for the alternatives. There's an alternative comparison table that was put out by the EPA, and I'm pretty sure you can find it on their website. I just went to EPA's website and entered in Portland Harbor, and it brought me to a place where I can see that there are meetings coming up. Let's see, June 24th from 11 to 8 at the City of Portland Building. That's 1120 Southwest 5th, June 29th, again, 11:30 to 8 p.m. at the Expo Center on Marine Drive. And July 11th from 11:30 to 8 at University Place Conference Center. July 20th, again, Ambridge Center on Martin Luther King Boulevard. And these are public meetings so that you can go and make a 2-minute testimony about your reaction to what's being proposed to clean up the Willamette River. My name is Kristen Yount. This show is called Water World. We have about I just want to state that I'm talking with Laura Shira, and she is with the Yakima Nation's Fisheries. And I'm here also with Jackie Calder. She's with the Citizen Advisory Group, the Portland Harbor Citizen Advisory Group, or CAG, dedicated volunteers who have been the liaison between the EPA and the public with regard to the Superfund site on the Willamette River. So it's been a 16-year process. The EPA just put out this plan, their proposal to commence with the remediation of the river. Work is supposed to start in a couple of years. This plan has to be approved, and there's a public comment period right now. It ends on August 8th, unless the public comment is extended. Did Yakima Fisheries already submit for a longer public comment period?
You know, we have not. We would love a longer comment period, and I think it would the public needs and deserves a longer public comment period, but we have not requested one.
Both Audubon Society of Portland has requested 120 days. Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group has submitted for 120 days. The Duwamish, and they have a shorter river and a more shallow river that's in Seattle that had a Superfund site. They were responded to quicker. They were given 105 days, whereas we're only given 60 days. And that's the reason we ask for a longer period of commenting. Which also, the other thing you can do is write your authorities, write your city officials, write the state officials, write the, besides writing to the EPA, I think if you wrote to your senators and to your congressmen, have to be in support of what the people want. And so if you tell them you want a cleaner river, you want the Fish Edible and the Clean Water Act subscribe to, then you'll be doing yourself and your children and your grandchildren a favor.
Yeah, possibly, huh? Just ask. I mean, all we have to do is ask for a cleaner river. We had a caller call in and ask about the sea level changing. We can expect a rise in sea level in the next 20 to 50 years. Is that something that the fisheries has looked at?
It's something we will be looking at and comparing what this to this proposed plan and any future engineering designs. It's definitely a concern. Sea level rise, catastrophic events like an earthquake or flooding. The proposed plan is under-designed for those types of events.
And so that one EPA official so famously announced that they would look at earthquakes when it happens, right? Like, we're going to put this toxic waste dump in the river. We're going to put an earthen berm on it. And, oh, if there's an earthquake, we'll deal with that when it happens, is what the EPA official said. Like, it's not even seismic activity isn't even recognized in this plan at all. Is that right?
Correct. And seismic activity is a certainty. We just don't know when that will happen, right?
Right. So,
and neither is the global warming aspect. And I think that's what the caller was implying, is that they didn't weigh that in. And we know for a fact that that's going to have an impact in the next probably 10 years. And it should be considered and included.
Right. So we're talking about the Portland Harbor Superfund site. On the phone is Laura Shira, and she's with the Yakima Nation Fisheries. And I have Jackie Calder from the Citizen Advisory Group, the Portland Harbor CAG. And we are talking about the proposed plan that was put out by the EPA last week. I wept when I read it. I couldn't believe how weak it is. It's definitely in our hands as residents, as people who live around the river, to advocate for a better plan. I want to thank my guests for being here today. Laura, before you go, is there anything you want to tell our listeners, how to get in touch with you or stuff like that?
Sure. I can just give you if people do have questions and want to talk to me, my number is 509-985-3561. And we just really encourage people, every comment counts, no matter how long, how detailed, how technical. You know, we should be proud that you're part of the public comment process, and your voice counts.
And thank you for doing so. Also, you might mention that the website.
Oh, thank you, Jackie. www.cleanupportlandharbor.org. And that's all one word, Clean Up Portland Harbor.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. My last thing will be about our forum that is June 21st from 7 to 9 at Harriet Tubman School. That's at 2231 North Flint. It's kind of a few blocks north of the Moda Center and a few blocks south of Legacy Emanuel. And we'll have Peter Defer, our consultant. He will be explaining things. We hope to have... we hope to have some exhibits there of the lamprey. We hope to have pictures of the lamprey. We hope to have fish tanks of the kind of fish that are not edible. Also, some other things that we think will be pretty interesting, and there'll be a few refreshments, and we welcome everybody, and there'll be places to comment, and there'll also be... like I say, other speakers, Travis Williams of Willamette Riverkeeper, Bob Salinger of Audubon Society, and Rose Longoria from Yakima Nation. She's been just a blessing to have.
Okay.
Yay.
All right, so it's time. Thank you so much for being with us today, Laura. Thank you so much for being with us today, Jackie. Any information will be up on the website. Thank you, Engineer Tammy. That'll do it for Water World today.
Thank you.
That was your host, Kristen Yount, on Water World. It's just about 10 o'clock. Stay tuned at 10:15 for Flashpoints. Today asking, why is the Orlando shooter branded as a Muslim instead of a homophobe? And Professor Vijay Prashad talks about the confused declarations of support by the shooter. And at 11 o'clock, we've got the food show coming up. Host Chris Siegel interviews Gary Wilson from the Lan Su Chinese Garden, Kate Faria from the Portland Farmers Market Fund, and Tad Seestet from Ransom Wine Company and Distillery. But coming right up, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Stay tuned for that.